Preston.
What do you do now the time? That's the purpose of satsang, to find peace. Peace is inside of you, not outside.
Talk of peace being inside of you. You said that there were 10 levels of consciousness and 10 worlds.
Then what?
Ten levels of consciousness or 10 worlds. Can you tell us how many worlds there are? Or it's just this one world.
When we use the word world, we are using it very loosely, you know. And this is a world we live in. As far as we're concerned, when you use the word world, you may only relate to the planet Earth and a few nations in it, but that is not the true use of the word. There are many levels of the existence, many forms of the existence. One that we are familiar with through our five senses is matter acting on matter. This here physical universe with the planets all going around it, interacting on each other, even with our biggest microscopes and telescopes, we only see these forms of matter acting on matter. It's one of the first levels of consciousness, the first level of existence. The second level is when you can slow down your brain. You can't speed up your brain to see it. You have to slow the brain down to a certain vibratory rate. And that's energy acting on matter. You begin to see another universe, entirely different than this one, interacting upon this very universe as a sort of a stabilizer, which this universe reflects. This universe is a reflection of that one. Now there are certain vibratory forms and music that vibrates from that universe to this one, that nourishes this universe. Then again, you have to slow the brain down more. And as you slow the brain down, you're getting closer to what is known as conscious death. That's what Paul meant when he was in the body. I live and die daily in God. You begin to see the third level of consciousness, or the third universe. That's consciousness now acting on matter. You're in contact with conscious entities of another level of existence. And that universe abounds with tremendous entity life, of which the other two are direct reflections of it. That's where you get the term as above, so below. These are reflections of these levels of existence. Then again, you have to slow down the brain more than you're accustomed to slowing it down. And you see another level of existence, another level of consciousness. And that is energy acting on energy. Up to this level of existence, by your own behavior and your own desire, nature, you can achieve a certain degree of awareness. Beyond that level, you can't go as a human being with your normal behavior patterns, with your normal attachments and understanding through your five senses, or even with your intuitive senses. You need the help of a fully realized soul who must act as a bridge between that fourth realm and then the fifth one, which is the first spiritual realm of the universe. Now the first four realms all belong to Lord God of creation, the Lord of creation. You may know him in your Bible as Jehovah. Also, you may know him as King of Glory, Lord of Hosts. In the spiritual context, he's just your spiritual uncle. He's not your father. He didn't create you, but you worship him by mistake. Since you don't know who you're worshiping on a physical level, on the assumption that there is God governing this universe. Only when we are fully dead do we get the reality that there's a God beyond all of these gods that we read about in the Bible. But then it's too late, we can't come back and tell nobody. Only a soul that can travel past these levels while in resident in a human form, through the help of the God-realized person that acts as a bridge to take him back to the true Father, which is called the Son in man. Then you begin to get a glimpse of the Lord of the soul. Now in the Hebrew Bible, you might know him as the term Elohim. In the East, we know him as Satpurush, the eternal Lord of the soul, the creative force. But that's the very first journey back to spirit, the fifth level. That is consciousness now acting on energy. We can get an exposure to it, but we may not be able to function in it. We can be helped across by fully realized soul, by relating and loving that soul and while in the human body. That's what Jesus would mean when he say, "None come unto the Father but by me." Yet, to function in that level, you have to still slow down the body and slow down the brain. this reaches a point where your friend's gonna part company and get scared of you. They think you're a loony bin. You're out in some never land. You never seem to relate here too much. The next level up is revealed to you by the grace of God through the God realized man, who acquaints you what that level is. That's the sixth level. And that's an entire universe all by itself. And that is consciousness acting on consciousness. We don't have the slightest idea of what that is on this physical body. We have a few faint models to which we can relate to. They are what they call spiritual antiques. They're left in our scriptures, vague verses pertaining to that level. And again, by the love and devotion and the daily silencing of the mind, slowing down the brain and learning to function in the death cycles, which is the purification of the heart process, to the point where it's almost not heard by the stethoscope, yet can be recognized by the cardiogram. You can perceive the seventh level of creation. That is beingness acting on consciousness. There you leave company, you part company now with the God realized soul that took you across. He doesn't go any further with you. He presents you to the Lord, true God, the true Father, the true Creator, the one that Jesus tells you to be afraid of. Be not afraid of him that will destroy the body, but him that will destroy the body and the soul. Then the teacher leaves you right there. From then on, only you and God can walk the path to God himself, within himself. Nobody can follow you there. Nobody can take you there beyond that point. Not even the God realized Son. Though the Son reveals the Father to us by that point of experience, we eventually have to walk it. Each man on his own two feet must finally make the final union with the Spirit God. And that's the eighth level. Beyond that, the ninth and tenth, it is not describable in words, because these are wordless states. These are states where mind don't function no more. These are states of beingness. And to describe the beingness state through the verbal language of the vocal cords is a desecration of it. So you actually live in it, eternal silence of pure love. To convey to your fellow man, you have to slow down the body and the brain and look at them through the naked eyes. Then you understand the eyes are the windows of the soul. And if music be the food of the soul, play on. In those last two levels, it's only music. There are no words. The ninth level has a name. It is called To Become in English. It has a Sanskrit name. The tenth level is called the As If level or No Name level. But those words are very inadequate to convey pure beingness. Eastern people have used Sanskrit as a language, or Hebrew, to describe these levels. Today, when you break it down in terms of English, there are very exact levels in English to which the mind can relate. But then, the mind has to go through the exposure of having a physiological experience. You have to have a physical experience from inside. So realizing God is on the physical level. We don't become God. We all become God realized. The difference between the God realized men and the men in the mental hospital is this: that both look stupid and crazy, but one can drive a car and don't create no accidents. Get the idea. They all look kind of lame. Because God is intoxication. It's the highest form of drunkenness you can ever experience. You know, you're drunk with the spirit, and then the mind tries to imitate that drunkenness by producing alcohol even from the bottle. And you still call it spirit too, you know. The body language can't escape from the experience. But the Christ is the only aspect in the whole of creation that takes the physical form back to the true spirit. That's why it's called the Son of God, not a man. The Christ is in all of us, but we got to waken up or become aware of it. That's the reason why Jesus asked Peter, "Who do men say that I am?" He was asking them to identify with their Christ nature. And some said he was a prophet. And finally Peter said, "Oh, it's Christ, Son of God." And then he told Peter, flesh didn't reveal it, that he didn't personally tell him that. But the Father within Peter, that's the Christ nature within Peter, revealed it to Peter. Peter had an internal experience of rising above the levels of consciousness by slowing down the brain and perceiving through his own Christ nature, the total Christ nature present surrounding the man Jesus. Then Jesus finally said to him, "Upon this rock I build my church." Upon that experience, it is possible to build realization. The body is a church, it's a temple. The only temple there is, you know, the temple. The only religion there is internal experience. But then he later told Peter he would deny him 3 times, simply because the experience that Peter had of the Christ inside was still not a conviction in Peter's mind and spirit. And the Christ was looking into him further to see that the disciple was vacillating. And so he told him he will deny him. That means internally Peter would deny his internal experience and think it's a form of hallucination, or following another man who wouldn't attempt to raise a single hand to defend himself against his fellow men, even though they accuse him of all kind of false acts. That would turn the mind of a man like Peter now, who was humanistic enough to want to protect his teacher. But the teacher didn't come to be protected. He came to teach how to identify with the Creator. So Peter vacillated back and cried out, "I know him not." But then 3 times is an indication of a certain process inside. You have to slow down the mind 3 times. 3 different ways. Beta, Alpha, Theta. Before you can fully say the Christ is in you, which is Delta. Modern medicine is now already catching up with God. In a few years to come, machinery will prove all these facts of the Bible as scientific principles, not imaginations. You cannot experience God with the mind racing fast. You can only experience it when the mind slows down. It's obvious that when you're dead, you're very close to God. You can't argue with it. But when you're alive, he's so close to you, you don't recognize it. It's your next breath. So between the next breath and death itself, learn to slow down the brain. They could have put that in the book 1,000 years ago. Didn't want to tell us the truth. But now we wake up to the truth, what it's all about. We don't have to run around like chickens without our heads to find God. He's closer to us than the breath. He's inside of us at the point of the forehead. When thine eyes, too, see, are single, centered, the whole body is full of light, atomic energy. Einstein says light, matter, is equal to the mass times the velocity of light squared. Jesus is saying it in his own way. This body is full of light. And the light is shining in the darkness. That is your desire nature of your cells. Or the ultra polarities, positive, negative. And the darkness comprehends it not. The mind don't comprehend why light should be in your cells until you start bombarding the atoms that form creation. But let your light so shine before men. That's the important aspect of it. That they may see the good works and glorify the Father in you. The time you spend to slow down the brain to observe the reality of yourself. This is what the good works are. Finding God and being enlightened in God don't give you a big intellect. Far from it. You might end up being the craziest fool in the world by being ultra simple in your behavior, like a child. And the world don't like you for that, because they don't need childlike people. They're always looking for some horrible individual, a threatening figure or something like that, to make out that he's important and spiritual. The worst insult to God is a long face. When you love God, you smile. What more obvious is than that? If you don't love him, you're going to smile. And if you're going to love with all your mind, you can't fall asleep. You can't die. Isn't that what he said? With all your mind, objective, subjective, superconscious. And with all your strength, that's your breathing, you know. No breathing, no strength. And with all of your heart, that's the pumping of the life blood in you. decarbonization of the blood. When your blood is overcarbonized, you're sick. You degenerate yourself. When you purify it, the body is healthy, it's radiant. It lives. It conserves. It expresses wonderness, simplicity. And your whole soul, loving Lord, your whole soul is just letting God take care of you. Don't try to take care of Him. We're too busy trying to take care of God, telling Him how to run the world. So we are more concerned with the 8 levels to which we can aspire to. The last 2 are not so easy. So you find that they say the universe is sound, you know, word, octave. In the beginning was the word, in the beginning was the octave, the audible life stream. And the word was with God. That is this audible life stream, this cosmic octave, existed in pure beingness. And the word was God. That's the only thing that makes it important for men, that God is cosmic sound. Cosmic music. Not somebody sitting on a throne judging you. Though when you're a child, you want somebody to judge you and punish you, because you expect that from your parent. And the word was made flesh. That means this cosmic vibration, this ultrasonic life beam, slowed down and crystallized and became tissue. And then it started to differentiate which type of tissue it will become in resident and function as a potential source of purity. Dwelt in man, male and female. So equal rights was established at the time of creation. In the cells, right within them, the pure crystalline power, the essences are locked up in there already, for the soul to be recognized and to hear. So you don't see God, you see, no man see God, but every man can hear God. To think you see God is an illusion. The closest thing you think you can see about God is light. And that is an illusion in itself. But to be sure that you're always with God, you can hear Him and feel Him and smell Him and touch Him. And that's music. And it will guide you in your utmost minute detail in your life. If you just listen. The hardest thing for us to do is follow instructions. And that was the very first thing that caused all the trouble in creation. You know, they call it the sin of disobedience. Well, sometimes you go into big companies and see, when everything else fails, follow the instructions. Same thing is happening to us. What more have we got than to relate with? We didn't follow instructions the first time. The Garden of Eden is the body, see. It's not a garden, not some place out in the middle of the desert. It's the human body is the Garden of Eden. The central nervous system is a tree of life. The roots is the head. And the center of it is the middle trunk, solar plexus. That's why the word has never changed from the dawn of time. Solar plexus, the light of the universe, the fruit in the midst of the garden. But don't eat of the fruit in the midst of the garden. That means don't try to find God through astral projection. Desire is the most subtlest force in the human body. It's like a snake. That's why the symbol was used as a snake. It can kill you, it can elevate you. God had to desire a universe before He created. But he knew that the power of desire can destroy as well as it can create. Therefore, he had to warn his creation not to be caught up in the craving to experience realization by astral projections or psychic phenomena. Even the son has to warn the brother. What it profit a man to gain the whole world and lose his soul? That means to get trapped in sensory practices of psychic forces. But as we don't follow the instructions, we end up doing the same thing again. So Adam, which is reason in man, and feeling, which is Eve in man, male or female, came in conflict with desire to experience God realization. They all want, these two forces want to experience God in man. Man always craves the unknown power, source of his being. But he didn't know what direction to go in. Only intuition in man can guide. That's the Christ in you. The desire nature can pull you down or lift you up. That's the serpent in you. Now, the desire nature told you the feeling, if you eat the fruit in the middle, which is you experiment through the solar plexus now. Plexus means brain. But it's not a real brain because it don't have the functions of a real brain. It imitates the real brain. The real brain is here, where you really know something or do something. So the feeling was fooled to experiment in astral projection. And when it did experiment, it got an insight into the knowledge of good and evil. It discovered that he didn't die, that he was outside of the body. But the body was lying down, functioning there, and he was outside. And he discovered he was naked. That means he was devoid of the physical form. So when the higher self called upon him and asked where to do it, he says, "We're naked." "Well, how you know you're naked? Who told you that?" "Unless you experimented with the wrong force." So the creative intelligence placed a block at the gate of Eden, which is the forehead, between the tree of life, which is in the back of the top of Eden. He placed a cherubim and a seraphim as the anterior and posterior function of the pituitary gland. You have two lobes there that blocks the energy from coming up now by virtue of reason and feeling to see the true light of God, and to enter back in the tree of life, which is immortality of the spirit. Since the feeling and the reason couldn't get up there, they were cast out to live in utter darkness, that is on the sensory level of the five senses, and to satisfy their bodily nature by living in contact with material forms, not able to live off of the essences of the form. They could not do like that over food and draw out the essence and feed themselves no more. They would have to actually eat it to break it down chemically within the body to live off of it. So essences like that were lost and shut off in the endocrine glands of the body, which you call the seven candlesticks in the Bible, in the book of Revelation, before the throne of God, which is the crown chakra of the spirit. So when they wrote the scriptural knowledge, they were writing a very unique science of how man was supposed to find God. Since they were feeling and reason is shut out now for the first time and cannot enter back into the pure stream of spirit, the Christ nature has to come down from here now. It has to come down to the heart. It can't come any further. This is the halfway point. It comes to the heart. That's why the pure in heart sees God now. It has to purify the nature of the man. The solar plexus is at the navel. This is right here. And the heart is here. So these two forces now, one has to come up. So this is called Son of Man. If the Son of Man be lifted up, I draw all men unto me. These are different levels of consciousness in the human mechanism. But we need a God-man. We need someone to do it as a bridge. And in every period of time, and in every planetary system, this goes on. Planet Earth is not a unique place where this thing happened. This principle of creation and the non-following of instructions took place as a drama to emphasize the process of the soul's growth. Therefore, in every level of creation, this particular act was performed. The soul did not follow instructions. So when we find it as a human trait in us to disobey and want to make restitution, it is because the creative intelligence designed it in such a way as a drama to emphasize the use of life energy and to give it the power of choice in a fragile form of flesh to redeem itself and attain immortality. He already took this whole process and set it up for us to experience. That's why he remains in flesh. And he comes to his own in flesh. And he lifts up his own by flesh. It's called the path of the saint, or the path of God. The journey of the soul. We must make the journey back to God in the human body. We must make it on a conscious level, with conscious love, conscious devotion, conscious service to our fellow man. Any other method would be a transgression. He who does not come up by the door, this is the door, and by any other method is a thief. If he tries any other method to get back to God and don't go here within his own consciousness, he's stealing from his divine nature. He's fooling himself. And he's caught up in the illusion of all kind of mind games. And to come here is straight and direct. Requires to be childlike, because it requires discipline, self-control. And to go back here and to be encouraged to come here and practice by miraculous demonstration is not truth. We must be encouraged by love to want to shut off for a few minutes every day from the five senses with the world outside and slow the brain down and try to love God from inside. We gotta leave these areas of the body and try and go up and raise the consciousness up and stay up there for a little while. When Jesus said, "Render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar, and unto God the things that are God," they didn't tell you what the things are God. But everybody knows that things are Caesar belong to Caesar. That was the money they were using. It belonged to Caesar, you render tax. The things that we use that belong to God is breath, vitality, energy. They belong to God. They nourish us in the upper portion of the mechanism. That's our spiritual income. Therefore, we are liable for it. And if we are bad stewards, we have to pay the price, the penalty. If we are good stewards, then we reap the reward. And the only way we can reap the reward is rendering some time to go inside. And the time spent is the only valuable time you're going to chalk up on your spiritual account. Any other time spent away from here is on your deficit. It's a liability in your spirit. And the time spent here is an asset to the spirit. That's why Jesus said, "When thine eyes are single, the whole body is full of light." He's trying to point out that we can't stay too long in the lower levels of the body and become happy and realized. We have to spend some time by going inside. The tree of life is in the head, where we are supposed to nourish ourselves without eating, directly from the spirit. But since we fall away from it by not following instructions, we are forced to mechanically eat to nourish the body and mechanically die. We aren't supposed to die. We aren't just supposed to rot when we die physically either. But this is because we disobey and we must pay the price. Realized men don't die unconsciously. They objectively, consciously leave the body when they want to leave it. That's why they can say in a loud voice, "No man take my life from me. I have the power to lay it down and pick it up." Jesus did not die because somebody put him in a cross and nailed him. He knew how to die, and then he knew how to raise himself from the dead. He was not the only one. There are many on record. What is happening, that from the Western point, we know of him more. In the Eastern writing, there are a lot like him. But that is not restricted to spiritual men. It's restricted to man as an aspect of creation. God made man that way. God made soul. Man is a living soul. And by making him that way, God entrusted into the soul the power of choice to deliver himself from the sensory levels to aspire to the spiritual level by surrendering to instructions. But we can be fooled by the mind when we don't want to follow instructions, because the pressure gets too hard. We get a lot of distractions and lots of enticements. But we have to know when to discipline ourselves and when to accept certain conditions of life and work with them. That's why love is the only function that can correct all the problems. And we have to grow up in that too. Love is a growing process. Though we're born with it, it surrounds us, we have it, but we may not know how to release it. And that is something we have to discover daily by temptation. You see, God is so wise in his way, he designed it that way. In order to be more loving, he tempts you. The one he loves the most is the one he tempts the most. And greater the obstacle, greater the man. Greater the temptation, greater the soul. Those who are tempted the most are given the most love by God to realize. Those who are never tempted.
So more children have to follow in the path, the greater chances are.
Yes. The more confrontations you have to follow discipline, some spiritual discipline, the more aggravations and more difficult it seems for you to perform the simplest spiritual task, God wants the best out of you. It's like steel. To get the best steel, you got to get more heat. Take all the impurities out of it. Put on the pressure.
It's always sometimes some people so long to go into that. Yeah.
Some are slow starters, some are fast starters.
God doesn't hate you just because it takes you 4 years to do the slowest thing. Thank you for doing that.
God cannot hate. How is he going to hate? His life. There is no condemnation in God. That is in every scripture of the world. And that is a realization of every soul, a saint, that achieved it. There is no condemnation in divine life or life. There's only unto the Son, unto the Christ nature in man is given the power to judge. That's the internal conscience of man. If God does not condemn, that means if life does not condemn, that's another way of saying it, then there is no way for life to peter out. Life must reconcile itself. All right, that's what we call God, life, the eternal life. It has no condemnation, it's pure. Everything in life is pure. Unto the Son is given the power to judge. Unto the internal conscience is given the power to differentiate or judge, but not to penalize. The Christ nature in man doesn't penalize nobody. It comes to lift you up by virtue of conscience, by virtue of self-evaluation. But you can't waste the energy and go scot-free. So there's injustice for all of the defiled. So God, in his true nature as the Holy Spirit now, sets up the law of cause and effect, divine justice. There's only one law. What you sow, you must reap. God can't punish you. Christ can't penalize you, or God can't condemn you. But the Holy Spiritual force, which is the vital nature now, will make you realize that if you hit somebody, you got to expect to be hit back. It's not a one-sided action. If you think I don't have to worry, there's nothing here to worry about. Impurity says, well, okay, if it's so pure, it's sterile, let's have some fun. Well, all right, it's over there, but look who got to pick it up. Something's got to reach up to go try and put it back in balance. That's conscience. So we try to put it back. Look what happened. It pierced. Until we can straighten it up back and get it in balance. And therefore, it's a law of cause and effect. For every act, an equal action. So we see God as life. Don't condemn nobody. We got the wrong notion of God as somebody sitting on a throne with a long beard and a pitchfork or something trying to do something. And the Son that comes down as a divine conscience in man, don't penalize him. You don't say go to hell or go to this place. Because you're a bad guy, go here and get your punishment, get your dosage. He may prescribe a medicine for you. That is, go sin no more. That doesn't say you wouldn't wipe your nose and take you out of the dirt. Heal you by your love for him. But he wouldn't punish you. He may chastise you in a way by telling you don't do it no more. A couple of harsh words now and then, you know, pull your ears up. So you wake up that the very nature in you, the very world around you, is your disciplinarian. So if life seems harsh at times, it's not God making it that way, nor the Christ in you making that way. It is your own thinking by not following instructions in the first place that caused it to be out of balance. And the moment you begin to balance it up, it will correct itself. So then you get the idea. Cleanliness is next to godliness. Follow instructions and you can't go wrong.
If every aspect of your life is clean and in order, you'll not be able to live a clean way of life and have problems.
Yes. That's so simple. That's what they call white magic. Yeah. White magic is the art of behavior and how to follow instructions. And they think it's miracles. Jesus says, the things I do, you can do also, and greater things shall you do. He didn't say lesser things. And to do greater things is simple to follow instruction. He that doeth the will of the Lord is my father, my brother, my sister. That's to follow instructions again. So how much more power you want? For who? And for over your fellow man? To perform miracles? That's ridiculous. I'm going to perform miracles to prove that I'm better than you? Then you and I are expressions of God. I simply disobeyed at one time, and I'm trying to realize it. And suddenly when I realize it, I want to prove to you that you disobey, I should clobber you at the head with miracles? Unnecessary. The miraculous demonstration of God's power is not. Every moment is a miracle. Who can make a flower come back? Birds are flying. That's miracle. Sun is shining. That's miracle. We pollute it, we destroy it, we try to do all kinds of things to destroy the beauty of it. So nobody's to blame. Don't go blame God. Blame ourselves. And don't be afraid of death. There is no death.
Verse 95, he was all in the bucket and he's all dead, right?
No, you're just born somewhere else.
That doesn't make any sense.
Hmm?
Well, I mean, once you kick the frame, you got to go somewhere. Where do you go? Do you come back to a world like you know now, or do you come back to like a dream world? Or?
You know, before you were born, where were you?
That's a good question. I don't know.
You were dying in from another world. Somebody was kicking you out from there to put you here.
Was it a world like...
Your parents were waiting for you for 9 months.
And during the time I died
and
in
during
the world,
9 months, you were dying in some other person's realm, in another realm. And they were mourning for you because you were hanging around too long, costing a lot of expenses. On the other side. You wouldn't kick the bucket fast enough and come over here. And now when you get here, it cost them a lot of expense to have you born. Now when you're dying here, somebody's waiting for you. They're pregnant over there waiting for you. See? And it's costing money for you to die over here because Medicare can't pay it and everything.
Well, what about all these entities on the other side? They're crying between. Yeah, they're crying.
Then Jesus says, death is your last enemy. Death is your last illusion. That's what the enemy is. Not somebody who will clobber you in the head and kill you. It's the illusion of your soul. Man is soul. He's not a body. He's soul. But he doesn't understand it. He does not realize it. So death comes like an illusion, a trap to it. And when he loses the idea that there is no death, it's all birth. Because God is life. God is eternal birth. He cannot die in himself. But
so this goes on infinitely for as long as...
Well, that's what the word infinite means. Eternal. No end. World without end.
Well, what about all these people on the other side that you hear about?
All right. What were the one on this side that you hear about? Where do you think they're going to be?
Maybe somebody's telling them about us, see?
We live in this body and we wear our clothes every day. Do you wear the same suit every day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year?
No.
Don't you take a bath and change it and hang it up somewhere and then put on another? Same thing with God. The same thing with the body forms. We are soul. So when we leave this body, it can only go through three phases. Decomposition, non-decomposition, or you take it with you. Pick your choice. If you behave and follow instructions, there is no decomposition of your body. If you behave and follow instructions, you may take it with you.
Who decides that?
Your behavior decides that. The instructions were given to us a long time ago. Do not eat in the midst of the garden. Do not try to play around with the forces in the central part of your mechanism. Don't get fooled by them. Center on God inside. That's following instructions. Bring your mind here. Bring it all this to the spirit. Now, if you follow the instruction, then when you pass on, the body will not decompose. Or it will be taken. You will be granted the grace to take it with you, like you call it resurrection. But if you don't follow the instructions, then you must pay the consequences imposed upon the mechanism. It must decompose. And it must learn the lesson a second time. To him that overcometh, I will not send him forth a second time. I won't make him do the lesson a second time. Which child, when he goes to school, fails his exam, is allowed to go out to the next classroom? You know anything like that? What is he supposed to do? As in heaven, so it is on earth. We can't invent anything that is not there.
That then there's no in-between state? Well, what about all these mediums that, you know, that claim that they talk to the spirits?
What did profit a man to gain the whole world and lose his soul? Have they found God? Or are they busy not telling you how to win the stock market or do some kind of thing that Aunt Mary, Uncle Joe is doing? All kind of concocted stories.
There is no one on the other side?
It isn't that there is no one on the other side. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is this. It doesn't profit their soul to have that type of information or involvement because they're not understanding themselves. They're not making you realize yourself. So, at best, they're deluding themselves. Now, one of the rules of true spiritual life is when you realize yourself, and if you are truly realized, you would not come to another human being and use his life energy to talk to another man. That's a violation of birth. There's not a single spiritual soul that is of God that uses that kind of method. Every spiritual giant or genius takes human birth to live in the dirt like us, to struggle with the trials of tribulation, to follow instructions to transcend the flesh, to prove that God is in him. That's a true spiritual sign. Now, anytime he's going to use mediumship or any kind of a concocted idea to impress the world that he's talking from God, you're being fooled. No teacher of truth uses that method. The founders of religion are not mediums. The founders of religion were men who lived in the flesh, brought religion to the world, the science of the soul, pure love, how to live in mankind, died for mankind. Even mankind didn't understand them. Mankind killed them. They were called the prophets, the true teachers of truth. They lived with us. They died with us. And though we don't understand, they follow the instructions. But then we got a whole host who pretend to follow instruction and didn't follow them. Now, there is a king that lived one time in this world. His name was Saul. He had a teacher. His name was Samuel. When the teacher died, Samuel lost the ability to contact his teacher by the inner eye because he could no longer see his teacher inside to talk to his teacher. So what did he do? They said he went to see a witch of Endor, meaning a psychic. He went to see some medium who could call up the lost dead spirit of Samuel to talk to him, to tell him how to run the country. That's what he wants Samuel to do for him. So he disguised himself so that the medium wouldn't recognize him because she'd chastise him if she knew who he was. He's supposed to be a good student of a spiritual man and he's going to come to her. But the teacher exposes them by telling him, calling him out, Saul, why you call me from my grave? Why don't you leave me in peace? Then the medium recognizes who is the customer she's got. And he refuses to succumb to that kind of parlor trick because he's not that. God man is not that. God man don't play around with these things because these are only games of the mind. And Saul was chastised and went out back into the darkness and began to go into his own karmic debt. Finally, he died through his actions. Samuel was a realized man. Saul was his disciple, his student. He didn't teach the student to go practice mediumship. He taught the student to behave and to govern the country. But his student didn't want to follow instructions. If student got into the blues, you know, so he got a young boy by the name of David to come play his harp to get rid of the blues. Then he got envious of the boy. This is his basic ego nature he's got to master. And to run to mediums to correct that is a hypocrisy. You can't solve it. The medium can't get rid of your ego. It takes a spiritual man to clobber you on the head with your own falsities to look at yourself and say, hey, this is the way you live. Follow the instructions, love your neighbor as yourself. Don't try to perform tricks. The question is very apropos. How high is up? Gandhi was a spiritual man.
I wasn't the Bible written more explicitly, so there would be no room for misunderstanding.
It was very explicit. The misunderstanding is in us, not in the Bible. Very, very scientific. The Bible is very, very scientific. It's written in such a scientific way. Until we can think scientific like that, we're going to be confused.
We don't.
The Bible said, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and the Word was made flesh and dwelt in men. That is a very scientific statement. It's so scientific, until you got all the mechanical gadgetry around you and all the laws of creation around you, which the Lord knew a long time ago when he started the whole process, that man has to evolve to come to the realization of himself. So from the dawn of time to the present time, man has made many changes in his attitudes and is in his environment, except one thing. He didn't change his behavior. He still kills, he still cheats, he still steals, he still perform all kind of vile things to his body. Though he builds planes, he builds a satellite and all kind of things to go from here to the moon and back. And he will go around the universe a million times. But will he ever change his behavior from one human being to another? That's the real test. When he learns that, then he can read the Bible as it's supposed to be read, as a book of science, of the soul.
When you have karma, it's like electrical energy held around you in the atmosphere or something?
Yes.
Who carries your karma? Like if you've got years and years and lifetime and life after lifetime of karma that you're walking around with, where is this held? You're not holding my karma, are you?
You're not saying that right.
All I'm saying is, like, am I carrying all my karma once, and how is it paid off? I mean, do I, if I say, well, wake up on my and say, well, I want to pay off a quarter of my karma, or I pay it off in 5 segments, or... I mean, where is the help?
Jesus said, pick up your cross and follow me. What is your cross?
My karma.
Your karma. And what the word karma means?
All your wrong actions, right?
So they have to accumulate someplace. They accumulate in matter. And matter is energy. And energy is consciousness. And consciousness is spirit. So they are right here around you now in the form of the life stream. So pick it up. That means raise your mind from below your navel and put it at the point of the head and accept the responsibility of living. And all the problems that come from the brain now, in the outward behavior, you must face them, grin and bear it. Meekly wait and murmur not. These are the ways to solve the problem. Then you will transcend. Be of good cheer, for I have overcome the world. What is the world? Remember I started off the whole conversation with the world?
You paying any of the problems that haunt you?
Every single thought. Jesus said again, and this is said by every great saint and truth, not one jot nor tittle of my word go astray. A jot is a period, and a tittle is a comma. When you understand the structure of language, you realize how much we are committed to God, that everything we say and see and do, we are committed for. We are using life energy via the brain as a human being. And therefore, we are liable to it. Now, it has a feedback. That's the new term they're using now, biofeedback. Bible semantics, philosophic semantics, and scientific semantics are all saying the same basic truth. There's no difference in the truth. The truth is still the same. We can use different semantics to say it because the time is changing, the environment has changed, we live in different world experiences. But are we realizing more or less?
Something realizes more.
You only realize when you experience it. You have to experience it to realize it. Now, if I eat a tomato, would you be satisfied? Then that's a realization. Until you eat the tomato, you are going to be satisfied. Equally true, the Bible has been written. And we read it from cover to cover. And I know a lot of people who can quote pages from cover to cover. But how many live it as it is lived from the internal processes? So what we're talking is not a verbal communication of the Bible. That can be very confusing. We're talking of a biorhythmic communication now, that's something that occurs within the mechanism. So we have to take Jesus and all these great teachers at their own word scientifically and analyze it there and apply it. So to follow the instructions, they're going to be very harsh. One of the instructions that you will run across is meekly wait and murmur not. Now, Jesus said it that way, but hundreds of years before Jesus, there was another man who said it another way. Murmur not at the dispensation of God. His wisdom is unbounded, his power is unlimited. The guy's name was Gautama. They call him Buddha. That's the way he said it. There's a guy called Nitty Gritty. He only says grin and bear it. what are we all saying? What is it they're saying? What is the actual experience involved?
Just put up with it, right?
All right. No, Sharon is saying put up with it.
But the Nitty Gritty is already experienced.
And Saint Sharon just said the same thing. Anytime you can come to the realization of what you're supposed to do with it, you are realized. You are walking Bible. Don't think that the disciples in the Bible that were written about have something more than you. You are a living being. You are soul. You're the epitome of the whole force. And anytime you take that information and make it work in your body and in your environment, you are living God's truth. And the age and the time and the customs, they all change, but the communication of the truth is still going to be the same. You're going to experience it. You got to experience it. How do you know that you might not have been sitting right near where Jesus was when he said, meekly wait and murmur not, and you mumble it that way? Then later on, you come along and find it. You're saying it, grin and bear it. Then later on, he says, put up with it. Now, Jesus will be back here tomorrow and lecture to us, he's certainly not going to use the word meekly wait and murmur not. He's going to put it in today's context. The very experience that he needs to convey to the individual, which we are losing sight of. The language changes, but the experience has still got to be the same. It's an indication of how to behave. Now, in the year 2000, he may put it this way. Don't adrenalize, learn to phosphorize. But you don't recognize what he's saying. He's simply saying, love the Lord thy God with all your mind and your neighbor as yourself. Don't adrenalize means don't hate, and phosphorize means to love. These are the two basic chemicals in the body. Phosphorus gives you love, adrenaline gives you hate. But he said it, love the Lord thy God with all your mind and heart and soul, your neighbor as yourself, 8,000 years ago. He's not going to say the same thing now. He's going to say it in today's language if he's going to talk to a bunch of scientists who are involved in abstract thinking. How are you going to get these men to come down to understand him? So he says, don't adrenalize, learn to phosphorize. And if we meet some extraterrestrial being who would tell us what's going on in the inner realms of love, he may use the square root of x is equal so and so. So the language he's going to use is going to mean the same thing when you start to think of it.
Is it?
This electrical energy within us, this life spirit, what else is there another name for it? Are we part of the sun?
Yes, we are.
In other words, what you're really saying is when we reach that state, we go back to the sun?
Which is the first thing God made, man or the sun?
Sun.
Why?
Keep us warm.
Have light, right? Did he create all those celestial bodies and then he came to earth and he put people on earth and put life on earth?
Why he made man last and didn't make him first?
He freezed to death.
Perfect answer. Where is it to put them? So don't you see you've got to be made from the substances that are around you? And when the scientist breaks you up and examines you, what has he got? You're made of 16 basic chemical elements and trace minerals with it. And there are 144 flying around you. And yet you can't use the others to make your body.
Because they're combinations, right?
And with all our so-called knowledge, we can't put together one like you. We know it's 16 of them. We know what the vibratory rates are. And we know the trace minerals that go to put it together. What could we make one like you? There's something we don't have missing. And that's, we don't know how to generate love. It's called the breath of life. That's the thing that we can't put together in the elements. We know your body is composed of elements. We know how many of them. We know the quantity. We know what speed it should be. But we don't know what speed love is supposed to be. God loved. Therefore, he created. We got to get the same degree of love before we can create another one like us. That's why there is no greater love than him who would lay down his life for his fellow man. You see what degree of love you got to arrive at before you can really say you can create? We can give life back to somebody else by praying for them. Jesus did that. We could do the same thing. We have that power. It's implanted in us. But Jesus didn't create another Lazarus. That's what we got to realize. He didn't violate no law. He merely fulfilled every law. That's what we got to see in the, when you're following instructions. He didn't come to wean us back to God by performing miracles to save us. We come to correct the problems that we create ourselves and didn't want to face. The woman who felt that if she could only touch the hem of his garment, she'd get well. But she set up these thoughts in her mind by saying, if I touch it, if I do this. Remember I said earlier, in the, as if, to become. These two levels, if we can use them, we will. God realized right away. But we don't know how to use those levels of thinking. Therefore, we are not God realized. So she says in her own mind, if I touch the hem of his garment, I will be well. She's automatically applying a law, a very scientific law, and very spiritual in itself. It's so spiritual that we don't even begin to comprehend the ramifications of it. But she says it in her own mind. She postulates the theorem. Then she goes and touches it. Who can feel that? I don't feel it, even if I'm touching it myself. But the master says to his disciples, someone has touched me. The disciple replied, Master, everybody's touching you. What do you mean, someone has touched you? Don't you see people pushing to touch you?
I mean, she actually reached that point.
But then the master...
Just say if.
But the master, yes, if, wait. You see, you got to spell if backward too. Don't spell it only one way.
Three.
3, 5, 4 from? I smell the blood of what? That's not the nursery rhyme. That's some scientific mantra. A lot of things we get as fairy tales have a lot to do with our spiritual life. Oh wait. She touches the garment and the master says, power has gone out of me. And the disciples, they're not going to argue with their master. But if he just said that and left it at that, it could be taken to mean anything. But he did not do that. He made it very specific to back up a scientific principle. Then he said, someone has touched me. And they said, Master, everybody's touching you. He said no, meaning the word touch has nothing to do with pushing. Someone has touched me, and they said, Master, everybody's pushing or touching you. And he said, no, power has gone out of me. There's a difference between touch now or pushing against somebody. Power left him. Now, in the new translations, you see the word virtue has gone out of me. When you see that, you're going to get misled. Virtue don't go out of nobody. The soul is virtue itself. But power can go away from the soul because someone can need that power and draw from it. Then he looks around in the crowd and he identifies the person who has drawn the energy from him. That is the way science works, to identify. So when he looks around, he says, your sin, your fate. He points out the woman. He finds the woman that actually touched him. He didn't pick at random. He turns directly to the one person and points her out and make everybody recognize who drew the power from him. He says, your faith has made thee whole. Your understanding of how this law works, this unity of life with all being, your understanding of it brought about your internal correction.
You, if you want something to happen a certain way, you walk up to it, you touch it, and you say, if such and such a thing, if, oh, I don't know, pose a problem. You walk up to something and you want, or you want something in life, right? You say, if I think a certain way, or if some conditions are such, it'll happen.
Yes. The answer is
that's
yes.
Pretty powerful.
Of course it's powerful.
Do you walk out to something and say, if such and such a thing exists, and such a thing will happen, it'll happen?
Yes.
It has to be open?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
It's kind of powerful, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Just say yes.
Your faith has made thee whole. Your faith moved the mountain. If you have faith in me, like a grain of mustard seed. Mustard seed is not a big thing. You can sit to the mountain, move, it'll move. Right in your brain, there is a little gland called the pineal gland. It's composed of brain sand, the size of, smaller than a mustard seed. The brain sand are crystals. If you can collect those brain sands to the size of a mustard seed, your brain acts like a laser beam. That's what Jesus is talking about, and it's been demonstrated by the human brain at Topeka, Kansas, Menninger Hospital, where they put the yogis and hook him up. I was in Chicago not too long ago, and we did a brain scan on my brain for alpha waves to collect energy. And we were observing what happens when you do meditate, what goes on in true meditation. You see, the Book of Psalms tells you must meditate day and night on the right law. But we don't have the right law tell us by the church. The right law is told to us in the Bible, but we don't read it or practice it. The right law is here. Meditate here day and night. Center your mind here day and night. Now if you do it consistently, you're only required to do it 2.5 hours a day. 24 hours you live. 2.5 hours or 2 hours and 40 minutes is only 1/10 portion, the origin of tithing. If we spend that 2 hours and 40 minutes, break it up however you want, but give God 2 hours and 40 minutes of just putting the mind here, you will cause these brain cells to come together to the size of a mustard seed one day. And then you can say, if I want this, it will happen. That's why he said, the things I do, you shall do also, and greater things shall you do. He knew that his disciples had to mature. He knew that mankind had to mature at some future date, that they will realize the law inside and use it. So, you see, as if is a powerful principle.
What was the other one?
Become.
Oh, How would you use them?
When you eat, don't think of the bathroom. And when you go to the bathroom, don't read the newspaper.
What?
When you're in the bathroom, don't read the newspaper. Well, you're not becoming. People have problems with their bowel movement, and they're in the bathroom. They're busy reading the newspaper. That's why they're constipated. They have a conflict of identity with the action that you're involved with. It's not comical. I know it's comical. It sounds comical, but this is the conflict of identity. You have a dualistic mind.
You're supposed to concentrate on what you're doing.
Do one thing and do it well. I'll tell you something.
And you are what you read.
Yes.
The consciousness is going into what you read.
Years ago, I read and do all the things that was contrary to the mechanism and got the mechanism pretty sick. And after I realized the fault is not in God, and the fault is not in none of the saints, and hanging on to the saints' church till to get me to heaven was my mistake too. I got to hang on to myself, pick up my cross and follow. I got to correct all the mistakes that I do to the body. You can't blame God. It's kind of crazy to go blame God for something that you're doing deliberately. When you're a child, you think like a child, you make a lot of mistakes, yes. But there comes a time you're going to mature. A woman is only pregnant for a certain amount of time. She's got to give birth to the baby sometime. So we go through a spiritual longing, a spiritual desperation of evasion of the truth around things.
You mean everybody tries to evade it for us to disprove it?
Mm-hmm. It's only a human trait.
Is there any way you can be like reinitiated and start all over again with what you've learned and go on from there?
The word initiate means to introduce. So you're already being introduced to the truth. They can start over again. The moment you take up the mantle or the cross and decide to walk the road, however the thorns are, just go along, grin and bear it, brush it out of the way. You pick up the action. The moment the mind has been introduced to the source of God as here within you, that's the crossroad, you see. The moment the mind is set to put this point in alliance or balance within you, from then on you must walk that road and not come down back into the other crossroads of thinking. That doesn't say you don't perform your service and duty to your fellow man and you don't get involved in your things, but you know there's a limit to where you're going to be committed to violate or your mechanism. You must maintain balance. You must maintain discretion. Your friends ain't going to get you to heaven. They're going to pray for you. But they're not going to take your sickness on them. They're not going to take your aggravations. And the way that God is paved with good intentions. All these things are around us. We got to still do it. As I said before, if I eat, would you be satisfied?
If a person meditated 2 hours and 40 minutes every day, how long would it take him to become purified?
You see, that's the wonderful way of the human being is. Before he attempts to meditate, he wants to find out how long it will take. You ever ask yourself how long it takes for you to swallow a mouthful of food before you eat it? You never do that. But to meditate, you already want to know how long you're going to take. You see how your mind is doing it to you? Don't.
Just a curiosity.
Don't let the mind create an illusion like that inside you, because you'll be pretty strung out and aggravated if you don't get results. You're going to blame God. You see, if you set up in your mind that you're supposed to take 4 years, and at the end of 4 years it don't happen, who are you going to blame? If you set up in your mind it'll take 20 years, and if you do it for 20 years, who are you going to blame? I'll tell you a story. The teacher that initiated me into Swamihood, was initiated into meditation at the age of 14. When I met him, he was already in his 80s. But at the age of 65, he went back to see his teacher. He had a well-rounded life. He fought the British. He helped Gandhi. He worked the law courts to release his son from prison. And he became a multimillionaire, owning nearly all the newspapers in the country of India. But at the age of 65, he goes to see his teacher. And this is what he tells his teacher. When he was initiated, he was 14 and the teacher was 45. Now he's 65 and he goes see the teacher. You can imagine how old the teacher is. So he tells the teacher, he says, "Sir, Guruji," that's the respectful way of saying teacher, "out of respect for you, I have practiced your technique of meditation since a boy of 14. Only because I love you. You know, I have never seen nothing or heard nothing that you call God. And here I'm a man 65 years and I've been through the worst of my life and the best of my life. And I still don't know what it's all about. All my friends, they see wonderful things, they hear beautiful things, they get so much beautiful experiences. And me, blank." So the teacher said to him, "Tell me, my son, how long you think you can meditate without fidgeting?" So he told me, he said, "I can play it safe." I told the teacher 2.5 hours or 2 hours. He was playing it safe. That's what I call playing safe. At his age, he's playing it safe. 2 hours he can meditate without fidgeting. So the teacher is a very factual man or practical man. And he just said, "Show me." So he said he sat down there and went into position and started meditating without moving, without fidgeting. And the teacher took a nail. Well, picture for one moment a ninja up in some remote mountain region where you want to find a nail that is clean. It's got to be some old rusty nail that's been hanging around for a long time. This teacher took this nail and took a rock and nailed a leg into the floor and waited. At the end of 2 hours, the man opened his eyes and looked at the teacher and said, "Sir, you see, I don't see anything, I don't hear anything, and I don't know God. Still back where I was 14, when I was the age of 14. The teacher says, "Look at your foot." So he looks at his foot and he sees a nail in the foot. But what are you going to say? It's not bleeding. But you know he's nailed to the floor. Then the teacher says to him, "You see how deep in God you are? Now, I'll pull the nail out and I can heal it, but I'm going to leave a scar to remind you how deep in God. Go home, don't come back no more." So now, if you stick around, the teacher will get a bunch of tough guys and throw you out. That's how the gurus are. That's how harsh their discipline is. Follow instructions, you may get it. If you don't follow instructions, you get something else. So the teacher pulled the spike out, closed the wound up with his finger, didn't bleed, but he left a scar to remind the man. And the man is in his 60s now, you know. This man is a wealthy man, he could beat the heck out of the teacher if he wanted. But he showed me the scar to remind him of how deep he was in God. Anyway, that night he got home, sat down to meditate. He said to me, "You ever been see the 4th of July fireworks?" I says, "Yeah, the whole sky is bursting up." He says, "My whole head was like that after from that day on." He says, "I can't even sleep no more today." He says, "I've got to close my eyes and it's all going on, like all God is flashing around." He says, "Now I know why my teacher didn't give it to me before. I couldn't handle it." He lived from 14 years to 65 years, went close to death and all kind of things, never had an experience like that. And he thinks he's a pretty tough guy. And when this experience occurred that night, he found out how puny a guy he was. See? Sometimes we want God. But what we really saying, we want God on our terms, we don't want God on his terms. When God comes on his terms, we find out we are very fragile creatures. We don't have the slightest conception of what it's all about. So we tend to build up images of it to shut it down. Moses had the same experience, it was called the burning bush. The bush that don't burn, you see. But when in that experience he says, "Who are you? What's your name? What should I call you?" So the inner voice told him, "I am that I am." Now you go tell these people down in Egypt, that's what your God is, they ain't gonna believe you. He says, how can I go tell these people your God is I am that I am? Alright, tell them Jehovah. Now when you break down the word Jehovah, the word means the power to create. It's IDEA. Jehovah. I is inspiration. D is desire. E is energy. A is action. And if you can act this out, you can make it happen. That's why Moses acted out. He was able now to act out the ideas of the Jehovah principle, the law of creation. He came down and he told the people. And when he first challenged, he had to test it. So who did he test? He tested the Pharaoh with his own people. And he just throws his staff down with the idea in mind to test it. And the staff becomes a snake. Now the Pharaoh was well versed in his science. And he laughed. He says, come on, Moses, now we got a lot of guys who can do these things. No? So he calls out his psychics or men of learning. And they threw down their staff because they were able to do a lot of psychic abilities. They all became snakes. Yes. It is that they couldn't. Any man who can do astral projection can cause it to happen. He can create the illusion. But let's see now, if he really has the power of the soul or the power of the mind working for him. This was the difference between Moses' realization and the Pharaoh's men's realization, the priests. They weren't realized from here, they were realized from here, from the solar plexus. And it was a greater force field between the two, one centering on the I am principle and one centering on the solar principle. So their snakes appear to be swallowed up by the snake that Moses put down. That means the God self drew them all in before their very eyes, and they realized that they were now contesting on a soul level, not on a mind level.